Welcome. It's not Labor Day weekend. You'd think it would be, but it's not.
What do you mean?
Because it's the last weekend of August, and so it seems like it should be Labor Day weekend, but because of a trick of the calendar, Labor Day isn't until September 7th, which is stupid.
Well, that's the first...
It's the first Monday in September.
First Monday is Labor Day.
I know.
But it just, that's the...
As I was telling our friend David Zeev, that means we now have two dumping ground weekends for terrible movies.
That's great. You know what? You know why that's great?
Why is that?
We don't have a lot of work to do. Yeah. We have less things that we have to pay attention to.
I suppose. You know, what really bugs me is when Thanksgiving winds up being really late in November, which then...
I don't like that either.
...cuts the time between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
That's why Christmas begins the day after Halloween.
Well, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, for LAFCA, for, you know, seeing all the movies in time and stuff in general.
LAFCA.
Well, that's just among other things. It's nicer to have more time between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
You've got all year to watch the quality cinema. This is a podcast of the cinema.
It sure is.
By the way.
You're Dave White, film critic for linoleum-knife.com, who is currently on hiatus from
all film critiquing.
Any film reviews, because you've got a book to finish.
You're.
How long is it taking you to learn?
My brain is hot.
Yes. Garrison. We're going to complain about the weather.
My brain is hot. Like, okay, so your name is Alonzo Duralde.
Mm-hmm.
I'm married to you.
Mm-hmm.
That much. I know my name is Steven. What was the name of that movie?
Yes. Not to be confused with Do You Know the Muffin Man?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your name is Alonzo Duralde. You're married to me. You're a film critic for somebody. Who? TheWrap.com.
I'm the film reviews editor for
You're
the Wrap.
You're the film reviews editor
and
of
I'm
The Wrap.
A film critic.
Also that.
The Flick.
You know what's the most important thing that you are right now?
What's that?
The president of the Queer Lion jury at the
72nd.
Yeah. Venice International Film Festival.
It's true.
In Italy, Europe.
Yes. Not our local Venice.
You're leaving town this week.
Yes.
To go be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
The boss of the Queer Lion jury.
Correct.
There are two. Explain it. How does it work? There are two juries. One's real and one's you.
No,
is
actually,
that what
it
is?
The festival itself, I think, has three sort of recognized juries. There's a main jury, and I think there's like a, you know, best first film or something. I forget how they play out. But those are the big deal juries who get official press releases put out, and they have people like Elizabeth Banks on them. And then there's...
What does she know?
She's a hit director now, so, you know.
Hit director is not the same thing as good director.
Yeah, well,
I saw that movie. It was not a good movie.
Somebody was wondering if people in Venice had seen Walk of Shame or not.
Did she direct that too?
No, but she was in it.
Another bad choice.
Yes.
On her part.
Anyway, the Queer Lion jury is not officially part of the festival, but this is their ninth year. It's a thing, you know. It has not become as ensconced within the actual festival the way, say, the Teddy Award has at Berlin, which is their gay award. But that's been going on for like about 30 years now, I think. So I was very honored to be asked. I'm excited. I think we have 7 films that we're considering.
They're flying you in. They're putting you up. The whole everything.
The whole schmear. So I will be writing reviews out of Venice for The Wrap, and I will try to post those on the Linoleum Knife Facebook and Twitter as they go up. But just keep an eye on The Wrap. That's where my stuff will be running.
While you're gone?
They're premiering, like, you know, that Johnny Depp Whitey Bulger movie there.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, the new documentary about Janis Joplin and the Danish Girl and a bunch of stuff. So, while I'm gone, what?
Oh, while you're gone, some podcasting things are going to happen.
Yes.
Here's the way it's going to go down. This episode is just going to be us talking about this week's movies. No letters. Here's why. We're going to record an extra episode.
At no extra cost to you, the listener.
It's still going to be the same free thing that you... Yeah. Anyway, all letters. We are so backlogged with emails and letters. Tweets, Instagram comments...
We're not responding to tweets. We're
so backlogged with correspondence that we need an entire episode.
Just to get caught up.
To get caught up. And we figured end of summer, when you're bored with the movies anyway, like you don't care. You don't care about the movies that are happening right now.
And let's face it, the week before Labor Day at work, you kind of need to make yourself look busy anyway. Because right. Everyone's you sort of got their anything. Eye on the door and wondering if they're even going to come in on Friday. So we're throwing in a bonus episode that
all
is
letters.
All letters.
We're clearing the decks of the letters. If you don't hear your letter read on that episode, then I lost it.
Or
it's a thing I've done before, so it's a totally probable that some of them have been lost.
Or if you are Noah Whitaker, we're not reading all of your letters.
If you're Noah,
because dang.
That you sent a lot of letters.
We appreciate the enthusiasm, but you know.
We're going to be selective.
They can't all make it.
We're going to select from the chosen few.
Yes.
Yeah. What else is the thing? Oh, yeah. It's
next
still,
week's
still
episode.
Brutally hot. Yeah.
Well, oh, no. You're doing your programming.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you about programming. So this is how hot my brain is right now. I forgot what I was even going to talk about. Next week,
what's your excuse the rest
there
of
will
time?
Be an... you... Shh. Continue going.
Go on.
Next week, there will be a Linoleum Knife podcast. It will not have you.
Correct.
In it. It will be me and my other husband, William Bibbiani.
Your work husband.
Yeah.
Of the B-Movies podcast.
Of the B-Movies podcast. I think his girlfriend Michelle is gonna come along too.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I'm gonna make dinner.
Okay. Fine. You know, do it up.
I'm probably gonna make something to commemorate you not being home with ingredients that you don't like.
Yay!
A variety of vegetables. The list of the ones you don't eat is fairly long.
Yeah, well.
So,
do it up.
Don't believe me.
Veggie mania while I'm gone.
I already bought the expensive Spanish tuna.
Mm-hmm.
Alonso Duralde does not like tuna.
I'm not, it's not that I don't like it. I'm not a big fan.
I eat it about twice a year. Because that's what I get when you're away. I get to make a salad niçoise for myself. All for me.
I have never forbidden you from making tuna in my presence.
Yeah, but
I just don't
here's
want to
the
have
thing.
It.
You don't like it because when I make like a tuna salad or whatever, you can smell it in the fridge. And it bothers you the same way that the deviled eggs bother me.
Right.
And so...
Yeah, see, I can only have hard-boiled eggs when you are not at home.
That is correct.
So, this is what marriage is like, people. Compromise.
Yeah, but the list of things I don't eat can be put on one hand. And the list of things you don't eat is a list.
Well, it's how I roll.
You're the palate of a 5-year-old.
That's not true.
That's... Okay, a 9-year-old.
Oh, shut up.
All right.
Anyway, so Dave will be doing an episode with Bibbs. My plan is on the following week to do an episode from Venice, the way I did last year. Ideally with friend of the show, Peter DeBruges from Variety, who will also be covering...
Does he know this?
...the Biennale. I have not mentioned it to him yet. I will spring it on him when I get there.
He's promoing a person that may or may not participate.
But, you know, he's a good sport. I think I can get him. I think he's gettable. So that we're going to try and make that happen. And then if not, we might just, next week might just be a little late and we'll record an episode when I get home and kind of get caught up on things. So, yeah, so that's what's coming up.
I'm already sweating.
Well, me too.
We're both sitting here in our underwear.
With all the doors and windows open.
Think about that.
Under a ceiling fan.
Think about that, fans of the show. We're nearly nude.
Don't start. I'm not encouraging this sort of thing. So, this week's new movies. Well, sadly, we did not see War Room.
I'm going to go while you're out of town.
Okay. Yeah. I would have totally gone with you. But yeah, I definitely think I want to hear your thoughts on this.
It's the new Christian movie.
Yes.
It's probably going to be number one at the box office this weekend.
It's number two behind something, yeah. Straight Outta Compton, but it did roll well.
And it is playing in Burbank, but not at the 6 or the 8. It's playing at the 16. Like, oh. that's how confident they were.
They've been kicked upstairs.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is a Sony movie.
Right, and it's from the people that made Fireproof and Courageous, so, you know.
So the audiences are big this weekend for that. So they've got it at the big AMC 16 in Burbank. But I think I'm still going to go to the mall after and dump our old telephones into the phone kiosk box.
Ooh, yeah.
To get cash spit out at me.
Okay.
In Susan B. Anthony $1 coins.
Can you use the camera on your smartphone to take a video of you dumping our old phones into the machine?
Because I will learn.
I want to see how that goes.
I will learn how to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because if I can't be there for that special moment, I
want to. Do you want me to wait? You want to be there for the special moment?
Maybe.
Could make a whole day of it. We could go to Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes. Okay, yeah, it's a date. We'll go to Burbank and dump our phones in the machine. Thrillsville. This is our life, people.
Then we still have the Burger King. we still have the Dairy Queen gift cards.
True.
That we got sent, and that's fantastic. Yes. It's going to be an exciting day.
It's going to be frabjous. No question. Also opening this week, besides War Room, which we did get around to seeing.
No Escape.
Okay, No Escape.
Well, actually, that
opened on Wednesday.
It opened Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's actually, it's only called No Escape because the longer title was too big for marquees and stuff.
And what was that?
No Escape, except for the white devil and his kids who get a boat. And kind of a lengthy, kind of like the Jean Dielman of 2015.
Right. And flee from a faceless mass of...
Yeah.
I think it was Mark Hoyk recently who pointed out that given their shared love of long titles, it's too bad that Fiona Apple never got to do a theme song for Lena Wertmuller.
Yeah. Look that up. You can Google both those names, kids. Fiona Apple was a pop singer of the 90s. She was of very little importance to me. Maybe, I don't know. Did you like anything she ever did?
Not much. Although, I don't know. The stuff, reading about her makes me think I might be kind of into her, but I've never listened to much.
What does reading about her do for you?
I don't know. I just the way people have described her stuff makes me kind of think, maybe I should give this a shot, but never quite to the extent that I actually ever gave it a shot.
So. I never gave her a shot. I saw the video of her in the bathtub back in the 90s, and I was like, nope. No thanks. Not interested.
Lena Wertmuller was the first woman to be nominated for a Best Director Academy Award.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
Should have been Ida Lupino.
Yes, well. Or Alice Guy Blaché, for that matter.
Yeah. But, you know.
Anyway, No Escape is directed by the brothers, the Dowdle brothers. They wrote it and one of them directed it.
They come from the world of horror films.
Yeah, they did Devil and they did As Above, So Below. You were not a fan of As Above, So Below.
I've not been a fan of really any of the horror films that they've made.
I've not seen any of their stuff before.
This is the best movie they've made so far.
Well...
Because it is a very exciting action film.
As an action film, it is very competently made. Unfortunately, it is so crazily racist that the Asian characters are so sort of generically, facelessly monstrous and evil that this might as well have been a zombie movie.
Yeah.
For all the depth we get.
Yes.
Why don't you explain what it's about?
So, White Devil, Luke Wilson, and his white devil wife, Lake Bell, mm-hmm. and their white baby devils, children. They go to Asia.
That's as good as we know.
And that's everything you hear. Like, they literally say in the film, it's great to be here in Asia.
The country in which they arrive is never named. All we know is that it's Vietnam adjacent.
I mean, you can tell if you know anything about, you know, Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. It's the signs everywhere are in Thai.
Right. Although apparently
it was shot in Thailand.
Although from what I've been hearing after the fact is that it's supposed to they never say where it's set, but it's we're supposed to take away that it's Cambodia.
Oh, really?
But they didn't bother to cover up the Thai signage.
No.
Which says a lot.
But anyway, so he works for a water company and he thinks they are the good guys. They're bringing, you know, clean water to the country of Asia. What he doesn't realize is that he works for the big bad people. His water company is predatory. They destabilize governments.
They just signed a deal with the corrupt prime minister.
They move in and they take over and they own things and they exploit people. But, you know, when you are Luke Wilson and you work for the water company, love means never having to...
Luke or Owen?
Do I keep saying Luke Wilson?
You do.
I mean Owen. I'm not talking about the brown-haired one.
No.
I'm talking about the butterscotch stallion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Somebody told me that when they, I forgot, some website, somebody was saying that they saw the trailer for this movie, and at one point he goes, I turned to my date and did the Owen Wilson, wow. And then at the end of the trailer, he heard somebody else in the theater do it.
Have you seen the YouTube clip? That's all wow.
No.
It's Owen Wilson saying wow in every movie that he's ever been in. Yeah.
Seven different kinds of smoke.
Yeah. So, okay, Owen Wilson.
Yes.
Sorry. You know what? There's like seven Wilson
brothers.
Where
is Luke Wilson? The last thing I saw him in was that terrible movie about the guy who invented like generic credit card billing for porn websites. That was actually a movie.
No, I know. But I don't know what he's been doing lately. Hang on. I'm looking him up right now. The last thing he was in of any note was Skeleton Twins.
Oh, yeah. He was doing that, actually. Yeah.
He was on Enlightened.
Oh, okay.
And he's got like seven movies in production right now. All right.
Well, good. Okay. So he's working.
He's fine.
He's fine.
Luke Wilson is okay. You don't have to worry about him anymore.
I'll blow out that candle.
So Owen Wilson finds out, you know, when you're Owen Wilson, you know, love means never having to question what evil corporation you work for. So he does. He works for them. And then the minute he and Lake Bell get to the hotel that they're staying in Asia.
Mm-hmm. We don't even know if it's Asia Minor or Asia Majora.
The angry Asians begin murdering everyone. And they especially want to murder Owen Wilson. They even at one point hold up his picture.
Yeah.
Camera and were like, we're coming for you in particular.
When they arrive at the hotel, there's like this banner welcoming, you know, welcome evil corporation with the pictures of the people there, which is a very Asian thing to do. Like pictures of the visiting dignitaries.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah, I've seen versions of that, you know, it's usually sponsored by the Lions Club or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the next day when the coup is unfolding in the streets, it's one
all of the Asia? Is that a thing that all of the Asia does? Or just the one country of Asia
exactly.
In this film.
National Asia. Then the guy like holds that banner up like, you!
Yeah, so that's fantastic.
As though Owen Wilson wouldn't stand out enough in Asia.
Anywhere. Right. He would stand out anywhere because he's got that blonde hair that's almost white.
Right.
You know? I only know one blonde person who's got blonde hair as blonde as Owen Wilson. It's our friend Hank.
Oh, yeah, true.
Hank's like that white blonde hair.
Right.
You know? So anyway, y'all don't know who we're talking about at all. It doesn't matter. So yeah, they got to run. They got to jump. They got to chase. They got to shoot, and fight.
And then Pierce Brosnan shows
up. Got to throw that baby from the roof.
Throw that baby from the roof.
Throw that baby.
Pierce Brosnan shows up periodically to save their bacon and to give the films one speech about sort of, you know, corporate imperialism that's supposed to make the rest of this movie forgivable. But
nope.
Basically, yeah. So it's, you know, people are being slaughtered in the street. Like, Asian people are being slaughtered in the street. And the movie could not be less interested. All the movie cares about is, will Owen Wilson and family make it to safety? Screw you guys. It's the same thing that bugged me about The Impossible, where it was sort of like, you know, the streets are full of dead, drowned people, but like, is Naomi Watts going to be okay?
I was really into the suspense of this.
It is an effectively made action. It is a
really good action film.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I watched it and I thought, wait, their cause is just. They're killing the right people. Owen Wilson should be killed, as should his wife and their adorable children.
All of
them should be slaughtered by the just cause people who want the corporation out of their country.
I would say that Owen Wilson should be forced to read a statement on television. And then forced to leave the country.
They should all be massacred. And so the fact that you are then rooting for Owen Wilson to massacre them back.
Yeah. It's sort of staggering. This movie's attitude about,
if you don't think this is a real thing, if you don't think this is a legit criticism, it's because you're white and you've never had to think about representation in film.
Yeah, or being presented as the other in a movie.
And so, yeah. I recommend seeing this film because...
As an object example.
Of what it is. Like, it's so weird and so wrong. And yet so exciting.
But yeah, in my review on The Wrap, I said, you know, when film professors show the works of Lenny Riefenstahl and D.W. Griffith, it's for the technique and more for the content, you know. And the technique here is spot on. It's done well. I mean, the second act or the second half is not as exciting as the first half. But yeah, the messaging here is just hideous. You know, I wasn't the only critic to cite D.W. Griffith. Somebody else said, at some point, I waited for Owen Wilson to duck into somewhere where they could hide out with Lillian Gish and wait for the Klan to show up.
I think the filmmakers may have had a good intention at the beginning of the project, like, not to offend one particular country.
Uh-huh.
You know, by saying, oh, well, look, this happened in Cambodia. Look at those bloodthirsty Cambodians. But by
making it Asia.
Yeah, yeah, but by ignoring, you know,
specificity.
That.
The implication is that, you know, it doesn't matter.
Right. They have effectively erased identities. And they have also erased the idea that, like, these folks and their concerns are
paramount,
valid at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it's not
it
like...
It sucks, and it's really fun to watch, and...
it's not like you can't...
Terrible, make... and so you should watch it, because
It's not like you can't make an action picture about white people running for their lives in a country that is not made up of white people. But it is in...
No. We don't have to see any more of those.
I'm just saying...
We don't have to see any more of them.
What I'm saying, though...
In the same way that I don't want to vote for another white man for any elected office...
Don't start with the other
that's,
one.
We don't need any more of this.
What I'm saying,
Let's take a break.
Okay. You be quiet. and you let me finish the sentence.
Okay.
There is nothing inherently offensive in the premise of making that kind of movie. Unless the non-white people in the film are pretty much either, you know, bloodthirsty villains with no names or cannon fodder.
Right.
You know, there's a way to strike a balance where you actually have some characters of color who matter to the plot. Some of them might be bad, but, you know, you at least know who they are and what their motivations are. Some of them might be good, and, you know, they also have names. Yeah, this movie can't be bothered with that.
So Zac,
Bernie 2016.
So Zac Efron plays a DJ.
Uh-huh.
In the film, we are your drug friends.
Again, that's the longer title. It didn't fit on the marquee. We are your friends. Hashtag. There's a hashtag in there somewhere, I assume.
Are we back on?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. You didn't tell me. You just started talking.
I thought it was obvious.
We had to cut for a second. Technical problems. Tell people what this is about.
Zac Efron is a DJ with dreams of getting outside of the San Fernando Valley and eventually playing in Ibiza and...
Ibiza. Say it right. It's your own country.
I was anglicizing it for the mass audience. Ibiza. And all that stuff. And he has three chucklehead friends that he's been hanging out with since high school.
Varying degrees of chuckle.
Yes.
Like one's nice.
Right.
One of them's nice for a while.
Yes. And then he becomes the protege of Wes Bentley, who plays this
drunk
sort of,
Calvin Harris.
Sure. That's the shorthand. Naturally, of course, the one woman that gorgeous, pouty-lipped Zac Efron falls in love with just happens to be Wes Bentley's girlfriend / personal assistant.
Played by Emily Ratajkowski.
Yes.
She's British, and...
She's a model.
She's a model. Her biggest claim to fame was that she was in the Blurred Lines video.
Ah.
But you know what? I like her.
She's got a
thing. Like, she's got a thing about her. You want to keep looking at her and listening to her do her... talky words and stuff.
I am withholding judgment until I see her in a movie where they write something for her to do and
I know.
Be. Because I've only seen her in this and in Entourage where she played herself.
But right now she's doing the thing that she's been paid to do most frequently, which is look cool.
Well, then
and
she's...
And move well.
Then she's winning.
She looks cool and she moves well on screen. And I think that's 50% of any actor's abilities.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I'm not against her. I'm not for her yet. But I'm waiting for somebody to give her something to do. So, And then it all weirdly boils down to being about how Zac Efron has to create his one signature track.
To get himself noticed.
Yeah. And
because the thing about the superstar DJ in this moment in history is that you can't just play records. You know, that's not exactly what a DJ does anymore. A DJ plays records, but they also produce their own records.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you've been a DJ in a club, chances are you didn't make any of your own songs. But you want to get to Calvin Harris level, mm-hmm. You want to be, you know.
You have to make your own little fluffy clouds.
You got to make, yeah. You got to do, you got to make your own thing. Mm-hmm. You want to be Frankie Knuckles? You don't want to be Frankie Knuckles because he's dead. But, I mean, you want to be Frankie Knuckles, you got to.
Produce something original.
You got to make Tears.
So, I didn't hate this, but I didn't like it all that much either. Part of the problem for me is if you're going to make a movie about someone chasing their dreams, and we know, generally speaking, when it's a big Hollywood movie about someone chasing their dreams, said dreams will get caught. But along the way, you have to make me at least believe for a second that maybe Zac Efron isn't going to get every single thing in the world handed to him on a platter.
Right.
I didn't really get that here. I pretty much was just sort of waiting for the inevitable, here's your platter.
I think of this as Magic Mike for dummies. It's
I don't know that Magic Mike was necessarily for intellectuals.
Magic Mike is a smart film. And this one is less smart. It owes its existence to Magic Mike and also to films like Scarface and The Wolf of Wall Street and but mostly A Star is Born. Because a lot of the same plot beats, you know, no pun intended, happen in this film as happen in A Star is Born. Yes,
but they don't kill the old guy.
No, they just kill someone else. Right. And so, spoiler, doesn't matter. Here's what I like about it. I like the look of it. I think you went overboard with describing it in terms of sort of Polaroid art photography along the lines of, you know, people like Ryan McGinley and like that.
I wound up not saying that in my review.
Oh, you did not?
No, we talked about it.
When you came home, you talked about it, and I was like, are you sure? You got your art world references tight enough to make that comparison?
I wound up not going there, so.
I didn't think of it like that so much as I just liked that it portrayed the valley visually as both, you know, a dead-end world, the San Fernando Valley, and also this sort of place of infinite possibilities where you could learn from it and use it to your advantage.
Mm. Well, Thomas Anderson isn't losing any sleep.
Yeah, which is what he eventually does in the film. But unfortunately, it's a film less about a man growing into his artistry than it is about, you know, a hustler finally getting his break. And because the signature track that he finally comes up with, it is conceptually a great idea, but its execution is like, is still a lot of whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
a problem.
The final scene is hilarious. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but just know that he DJs really hard at the end.
There was an interesting piece online this week about that we don't give enough credit to that thing you do. The people don't talk about that movie enough. People don't remember that movie.
That's kind of also kind of whatever, but keep talking.
But the point that he made that I thought was very true, which is that it's one of the few movies that is about people creating a work of art.
Yes.
Where the work itself is really good and undeniably so.
Yes.
A lot of times when you see a movie where somebody has to write that one song or take that one photograph or blah, 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 then you see the thing, it's like, eh. Like, that's what's so great about I've Heard the Mermaid Singing, the great painting that everybody talks about.
Is never seen.
It's just this light in a frame, you know. Yeah. When you finally get to his signature track, it's sort of, okay, well, yeah. I mean, I see where it ties into the character. With all these...
I see what you were trying to do
exactly,
here.
Exactly. Yeah. A for effort. But yeah, it's not that great.
Yeah, because when you leave that thing you do, you don't remember the movie at all.
But you remember
you're singing, that thing you do. Yeah, you're singing that song because they play it like 7 times in the film.
Exactly. Also in this movie, you can tell that the director, it's his first time, his first feature. He made a lot of videos for that magazine Good.
Oh, yeah.
And you can tell it has a very sort of YouTube infographic aesthetic with the sort of like words on the screen and, you know, graphs and charts and things. And where they explain how dance music works, that was kind of interesting.
I guess.
I like, you know, I generally speaking like movies about people's jobs when I don't know what those jobs entail.
Yeah.
It's why I liked Draft Day.
Yes.
So I was interested in learning about that 128 beats per minute is the sort of platonic ideal of dance music.
I like it a little slower than 128.
Well, you're old.
I like a little slower tempo.
No one is doing Boogie Down Productions for you at the old folks' home. You're having dinner at 4:30 at Luby's. The young people want to rave at 128 beats per second. They don't want a cha-cha on the Lido deck with you.
That's kind of the initial appeal for me of dubstep was the idea that, you know, it's 140-ish, but it's actually sort of cut in half, so it's more like reggae. It's kind of, you can just slowly enjoy that. You
just skip every other one.
But then still it becomes dubstep after a while.
And
so
there's that. That yeah. is a problem, yes. what else do we have this week?
Other than Z for Zachariah, oh, that's right. it. And I did not see Z for Zachariah.
And Queen of Earth, I showed
you. You did. You saw two small films that I have not seen.
Okay. Z for Zachariah is based on a book I have not read, and apparently takes some liberties with that book. But people I have talked to,
good.
People I've talked to who
screw the literalists. Done with those people.
Yeah, they seem to be okay with it. So basically, the premise is it's a post-apocalyptic world, seemingly. You know, around the present, and they don't really get into detail about what happened, and it's not really important. We open on Margot Robbie, who is living alone in this high, high mountain valley where miraculously the fallout or whatever it is that's poisoned the rest of the earth hasn't affected things. So she's still able to grow crops. There's water that she can drink, you know, and so, it, you know, she's managed to survive. One day, out of nowhere, arrives this guy in like a big radiation suit, you know, lugging this sort of wagon of supplies, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, and he is, you know, he tests the air and the water and realizes that he can actually take the suit off, and he's excited, and he immediately runs and jumps into this pond under a waterfall, and she comes and screams to get out of there because that brings in water from outside the valley, and it's totally radioactive, and she has to sort of nurse him back to health, and he starts helping out on the farm and using his scientific know-how, and they kind of start growing close, and they're not really sure where to go with that, and she's very devoutly religious, and he is very scientific and logical. And as they are close to, you know, getting together and figuring out what's going to happen, along comes Chris Pine, who has been in a coal mine deep way down and had managed to survive up until now. She invites him to stay. Ejiofor is, of course, suspicious, and things get complicated from there. I really liked this movie. I didn't really know where it was going to be going, and it's beautifully shot by the cinematographer who's done a lot of David Gordon Green's movies, and I was really impressed with, you know, we always complain about the terrible Christian movies that get made, because there are a lot of them, and they are terrible. Margot Robbie's character is presented as a devout Christian, and the movie doesn't judge her for it. The movie doesn't pull any kind of switcheroo on her, and they treat her and the character with respect, which, and of course, it all comes together now. This is a Walden Media movie.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Which I remember seeing their credit run, and I thought, strange choice. But no, of course, it's based on a book, and it's got a Christian character in it. No wonder it's a Walden Media movie.
And in general, the Walden movies
are pretty good.
They're not bad. And they do usually have some sort of Christian theme going on through them, while at the same time not being a garbagey Christian movie.
Right.
And the reason is because they're made by people outside of the world of Christian filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
They are made by the people that, you know, the church kicked out for being artists.
Don't get crazy. The guy who runs Walden is this, like, super gajillionaire who hates gays.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's based in Colorado. Well, Philip, you know, Anschutz.
But his
movies are a lot more open-minded than apparently. Because, like, if you look
what I'm saying is that, we've talked about this before, the reason the Christian film industry is so terrible is because they kicked out all the artists.
Yes.
And they're left with
Kirk Cameron,
yeah. And so, regardless of this guy's political leanings, mm-hmm. he knows who to hire.
Yeah.
To get his, you know.
Yeah, this is directed by Craig Zobel, who made Compliance.
Yeah.
So I found her character really fascinating. And, you know, look, I have no dog in the hunt of making sure that Christians are well represented on screen, but, you know, if you're going to do it right and make it interesting. And frankly, if the idea behind these movies is to win people over to the Lord, you're going to do a better job of it if you make better movies with more realistic characters and not these cardboard cutouts that the Kirk Camerons of the world keep giving us. I mean,
right.
Haven't seen War Room yet, but, you know, if it's from the people who gave us Fireproof and Courageous,
it's going to suck.
We can pretty much guess how it's going to go. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally recommend Z for Zachariah. Also out this week is Queen of Earth, which is opening in limited release. It's also available on demand, so if you're in the U.S., you can get it. It's the new film from Alex... is it Alex? No, it's not Alex Ben Block, the film critic. Why do I always forget this guy's name?
I don't know. Alex Ross Perry?
Alex Ross Perry, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, who previously directed Listen Up, Philip and The Color Wheel. This reteams him with Elizabeth Moss. And she plays a woman who has just had a devastating breakup and goes to spend some time with her best friend, played by Catherine Waterston, at her lake house. And we come to find out that maybe their relationship isn't the greatest either. And for various reasons, more and more Elizabeth Moss's character is basically just kind of losing her grip. There's a lot to like about this movie. I think Moss's performance is really good, and so is Waterston's. And Perry is an interesting filmmaker. I think that he... flourishes in telling stories of non-likable characters. When people complain that, you know, they want to like the characters, they probably shouldn't see Alex Ross Perry movies because he's not interested in that. A couple things that bug me. The score for this film, it starts out interestingly because it feels like a horror movie score when the movie is not playing like a horror film. But then by the end... it is playing like a horror film. I mean, it kind of, this is almost sort of like his repulsion in a way.
Oh, okay.
And then by that time, it just feels extraneous. Like it's sort of, you know, it's nudging you when we've already figured out where it's going. So it worked better when it was kind of contradictory, but once it just becomes an underscoring of what we already know, it's less interesting. I was also reminded of, in a movie I love that Dave got me an out-of-print DVD of last year, from the Journals of Gene Seberg.
Yeah.
Which is this wonderful...
I'm the best at Christmas.
You are. This is a wonderful Mark Rappaport movie starring Mary Beth Hurt, basically playing Gene Seberg from beyond the grave, telling her own life story. And in discussing the film Lilith, which Seberg had starred in, there's this interesting tangent where they talk about how... there is something about the spectacle of a woman losing her mind that male artists love so much that they go back to it over and over and over again. There's so many operas and so many movies and so many plays about women going crazy. And while I was watching this film, I thought, oh, this is one of those. And it's not that you can't do them and not that they can't be done interestingly, but it does fall into a category that's been traversed a lot by a lot of male artists, you can think of five examples on the top of your head, probably, you know, A Streetcar Named Desire and Images and whatever. So in that respect, it was a bit of a letdown in that I think Perry usually makes movies that feel more unique and cover subject matter that feels more unique. But that does not negate the fact that Elizabeth Moss is acting the crap out of this thing. And she's really great. And if you like her a lot and, you know, you want to see more from her, you should definitely check this out.
And I do.
Then you should watch it.
I like her.
Yeah. Is she your new favorite Scientologist or is it still Juliette Lewis?
Juliette Lewis has been doing it longer.
True.
Therefore, she is the queen. She is the number one Scientologist.
Okay.
Elizabeth Moss is the second best Scientologist.
Okay.
That's how I'm going with this.
I'll allow it.
Yeah. Because I don't care if either one of them are Scientologists. That's how much I like both of them. The other people who are celebrity Scientologists, I don't give a damn so much about them in the first place. So the fact that they are also Scientologists makes me think.
As long as they aren't coming over and
First of all, Beck, I'm not so into your music and I never have been.
As long as they're not coming over to leave flyers in our mailbox to get us to come to some, you know, Ribisi acting course, you know.
You know, I would go to those things if only they wouldn't kick you out when you show up and you don't want to play games with the IDs and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't insist on reading the magnetic stripe on the back of your driver's license.
My friend Lori and I went to that one downtown at USC.
Yeah.
And we got there dressed up. I had on a jacket and tie.
She wore a dress.
You know, like we pretended to be a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked us for our driver's licenses so they could scan them for all of our information. And we were like, but we don't want to do that. And they were like, sorry, that's how you have to do that to come in. And then when I was like, but why? Like, I started asking them why.
Yeah, right.
And then one of their people sort of walked with us to the exit. I was like, dang it, Scientology. I just want to love you
from afar.
A little bit from afar. I feel genuine civic pride over their existence in my city. God. Think about it. That gorgeous building on Hollywood Boulevard with that beautiful neon sign. That's evidence number one about
the Scientology Vatican on Hollywood Boulevard. They're buying up all the property.
Then there's the annual Christmas Wonderland.
The winter wonderland
next door
never says Christmas
to the neon sign building.
Yes,
those are two fantastic things about Los Angeles. Then there is the fact that their giant cathedral place farther down on Sunset across from the hospital is on L. Ron Hubbard Way. They got their own street. Then here's the other great thing. Let's say you have an appointment at Kaiser. Sometimes we do. You go there, you park in their parking lot, and then you drive back, but you don't take Sunset home, you take Fountain home.
Cut down L. Ron Hubbard Way?
Just so I can go past the Scientology apartment buildings.
Ugh.
And all the people coming out of the Scientology apartment buildings dressed identically.
See, those depress me because when I usually have my Kaiser appointments like early in the morning before work.
It's affordable housing.
So I see all of the slave drones coming out to the bus stop to go head out to whatever parts of Los Angeles.
I know they are horrible.
Where they have to give personality tests all day.
I know they're a horrible religion and I know they're evil and I know they make... You know, they ruin people's lives and stuff, and they made Leah Remini have to get a reality show or something. But come on.
You find them hilarious, which they are, but they're also creepy.
I got e-metered that day.
Yes.
At the book fair, Dianetics people were at the book fair, and they were like, Would you like to have your stress tested? I was like, yes, I would. And they e-metered me.
We've told this story before.
Apparently, I have an immense amounts of stress.
Yes, you are lousy with Thetans. if you haven't seen Going Clear, everybody.
Yes, it's fascinating.
Go see that movie.
Yeah. I'm a suppressive person.
Person or personality?
I don't know.
Something.
But I'm both of those things. And yet I love them. Your phone's going off.
Yes.
Why is your phone going off in the middle of recording a podcast? What's wrong with you? Why are you ruining everything? You know what? Let's do DVD releases, and then we're actually done with this episode.
Yes. So we both have docs this week. I'm picking Dior and I, which is about designer Rafe Simons, who had up to that point only really done menswear. Getting hired as the new couturier for the House of Dior and having less than a year to put together his first runway show. It is exhilarating and gorgeous. And I mean, there are some shots in this movie, not even of clothes, that are so beautiful that I almost cried. When he's putting together these walls of flowers for the runway show, it's just breathtaking. And it's, you know, I it's a movie about somebody's job, you know, and it's a really interesting look at the creative process. And if we're not going to get Signe Chanel in this country, this is pretty close.
Yeah. You're kind of a next level fashion bro.
No.
Except that you wear cargo shorts.
I have you to curate my outfits. That's all. That's it.
Glenn Campbell, I'll Be Me.
Mm-hmm.
which is very sad. It's about him getting Alzheimer's.
Yes.
But it's also about how great Glenn Campbell was.
Yes.
I mean, he wasn't great to Tanya Tucker, but...
No.
That was... He was drunk a lot. And so... he was a complicated man with many problems, but he was a great artist.
It's an amazing story about this tour that they put together for him where it's always kind of dicey as to how on he's going to be and how ready he's going to be. And actually, you know, there was that documentary that we both loved called Alive Inside about how listening to music sort of awakened parts of people's brains who had dementia or Alzheimer's that were otherwise kind of still dormant. And I think a case can be made here that playing music for Glenn Campbell was a way to kind of keep his brain going more actively than it might have otherwise.
Yes.
It's a beautiful movie. And weirdly enough, it kind of makes you realize that so rarely do artists get to kind of take a victory lap. Because if you're somebody like Glenn Campbell, whose heyday was 40, 50 years ago... There are, you know, individual musicians who probably grew up listening to your stuff and loving your stuff.
Yeah.
But unless somebody makes the effort to like, hey, let's all pay tribute to this guy. A lot of times those folks die. And then it's suddenly it's like, oh, yes, what's that line from Stripes? One day Tito Puente is going to die. And you're going to say, oh, I've loved his work for years.
Yeah.
The idea that because they knew he was getting to the end of his... relative lucidity, that they could put this tour together and have all of these greats of music come out and be like, yeah, Glenn Campbell,
right,
and perform with him. Every artist should have that kind of, you know, late in life affirmation while they're still around to enjoy it.
If you don't know much about him, go get the album that he did with
Bobby Gentry,
Jimmy Webb.
Oh.
Also the Bobby Gentry records too. And
the movie does a really good job, actually, of kind of giving you an idea of why he mattered, you know, even if you were coming in cold.
Yeah.
Before getting to the actual meat of the story. They do a good sort of quick behind the music, you know.
Yeah.
Here's everything you need to know about Glenn Campbell.
So anyway, that's it. We are done with this episode. We're going to say goodbye, and then we're going to do another episode that's all letters.
Yes,
and that'll be coming. You'll get that one
in a few days.
In a few days.
Yeah. So as always, we thank you for listening. We thank Blue for our wonderful theme music, and you can purchase his wonderful work at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. Check out our friends on the web, ChristyLemire.com. Oh, hey, the Rotten Tomatoes podcast. The episode that I did with Leonard Maltin and comedian Paul Scheer, the Your Opinion Sucks panel that we did live at UCB, is now available. It is the current episode of the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, so you can check that out there at, I think, wolfpop.com, or
you can
stream them on Stitcher as well. Go check out that episode. I had a blast doing it, and I think it came out really well. Check out the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, Fat Guys at the Movies, the Criterion cast, Film Spotting, SVU, the Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, the Joel Ryan Thing, and Sewers of Paris, which Dave and I both recorded interviews this week with host Matt Baume.
Yes.
And those will be popping up in September.
When is that going to be?
He just said September.
Sometime in September.
Yeah. Okay. Might be one episode, might be two episodes. We had a lot to say. We'll see how it goes.
We're fascinating.
Indeed.
Yeah.
You can, of course, subscribe to the show for free on iTunes. And if you want to leave us a review there, that would help so much. It really does help steer people to the show and let us stand out a little amongst a very large sea of podcasts. Big thanks to Bruce Seeds and E. Arlen Johnson for leaving us some nice feedback. We appreciate it. You can also stream the show for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, which you should totally go like if you haven't already. Join the Linoleum Knife group page and talk about movies with our other listeners. And subscribe to our YouTube channel. I just posted another episode back from 2011 where we talked about Arthur and Hannah and Soul Surfer. Yeah, we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of this show, believe it or not.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, it's bananas.
That's does anyone care?
So people listen.
What have we accomplished? anything?
We've gotten better at this, I think. I like to think. And hopefully by the time the 5th anniversary show rolls around, we'll have our subscription model in place.
Not hopefully, we will.
All right.
Things just move slowly. Anybody who's impatient, just calm down. And
it'll happen.
Things move slowly, yes.
Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at LinoleumCast.
Yes.
And, of course, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with any questions or comments. And, of course, that's where you can PayPal us $1.99 each for our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes, of which there are several. And, yeah, so we'll be back in a couple days with our All Letters episode. And then I'm off to Venice. And I'll be Instagramming and Facebooking from there as well. So I'll keep you posted on the things that I see and the things that I eat.
Goodbye.